Flex state, enter rink name, click add my story, and register. It's that easy. But hurry, contest ends March 2nd. How about Wenatchee becoming the next Kraft Hockeyville? Hashtag Let's Rally, and show why you love Wenatchee and the town Toyota Center.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Twelve fifteen, and good afternoon to you and to everyone listening. Consider this, friends. The Hippocratic Oath is an oath historically taken by physicians. It's one of the most widely known of the Greek medical texts. And in its original form, it requires a new physician to swear by a number of healing Grecian gods to uphold specific ethic standards. Hippocratic Oath, named after Hippocrates, who often is called the father of medicine in Western culture. And the oath states in part, "Into whatsoever house I enter, I will enter to help the sick. I will abstain from all intentional wrongdoing and harm." And over the times, this has been abbreviated to the well-known phrase, "First, do no harm," which is a bold and idealistic vow that governs every doctor's daily response to the sick, to the suffering, to you. I only mention this because the idea of first do no harm could very well be included in the oath that congressional representatives take when swearing to uphold this and that. Also promise while you're swearing not to mess things up. Do no harm while serving the public in Washington, D.C. Now, this is a time when a lot of people have taken oaths and then began taking advantage in the next moment, not paying much attention to that oath. Such is life in the federal district. But what about our new congresswoman who is also an M.D. and has taken the Hippocratic Oath? Well, let's find out as we talk with Congresswoman Krim Schreier as she visited our studios just moments ago. The interview begins now. This is News Radio 560 KPQ. The show is called The Agenda. I'm Michael Knight. My very special guest is Representative Dr. Krim Schreier from the 8th District. Last time we spoke, you were a candidate. And what a race that was with all the television that we all saw. I'm sure we've seen you in not only your commercials, but your opponent's commercials for months and months at a time there.
I know. Isn't that crazy? First of all, Michael, thank you for having me back on.
Thanks for coming back.
If my memory is correct, this was my first radio interview during the entire campaign. So I want to thank you for giving me a good
If your memory is correct, you probably thought we were going off the rails because my first question somehow involved your husband. You said he was a scientist. And I said, that's it. We're not talking about politics. I must know what dark matter is. And we went off the rails for a few seconds. You probably thought it was all going to go that way, but not the case.
That's really funny. Well, I am thrilled to be back, and I'm thrilled to be representing this district. And it's funny that you mentioned that about my face. I'm not used to really being recognized anywhere, but now it turns out that when I get on that plane going from Seattle to Washington, D.C., everybody on the plane knows who I am.
What's it like? You had to find a – well, my first question is, you don't have a place to live in Washington, but that's where you have to go to work, so you have to find a place to live. It has nothing to do with politics. It probably has to do with inside – who's the keeper of the apartments in Washington? Who do you go to find a place?
So that's a great question. Lois Frankel is – I kind of call her the mother hen of the Democratic women. She helped us all along the way by sending us little clapping hands, and you got this all along the way. And so she was the first person I – called when I won to ask where I should start looking for an apartment. And she said, "I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Hang tight." Oh. And she said, "I got a place for you. Call him right now." So I have an apartment in a building with about 30 other members of Congress, both sides of the aisle. And it's a great place to be. It's like being
so they
college.
Say this apartment was held by a guy, a Republican from Arkansas, and before that, a woman Democrat from Minnesota, and now you've got it.
That's really funny. I feel like maybe I should be etching my name on a wall or something.
So I was here.
That's right. Krim Schreier was here.
Well, as soon as you got to Washington, you shut down the government, or someone did. I never got the full details on it. It looks like everyone was a bit taken aback by that.
Oh, wait. Hold on a second. Hold those horses. I did not shut down the government. This happened before I even entered. I was sworn in on January 3rd. The government was already shut down. And need I remind everybody that this was... that our president owned this, and he called it the Trump shutdown.
So when you got to Washington, the place was out of business. Crazy.
There was a partial government shutdown. It was devastating. It was absolutely the wrong way to run our government. I think, you know, the one probably good thing that came out of all of this is that we all now understand just how important our federal employees are, because this was devastating. It was devastating for our district and for people all over the country. And look at our air traffic controllers just as an example, and even local food banks were having trouble keeping up with the increased demand. So I treasure our federal employees, and this is no way to run a government. We don't hold the American people hostage.
Well, I think the no way to run the government tag can go on more than just the shutdown of the government. What's it like to be in Washington, which is a city that's driven by the actions of the government, but the government seems to be in this constant edge of chaos where there's a certain level of madness about everything that happens every day?
Edge of chaos? Did you say edge of chaos?
I'm trying to be polite.
You know, it's really exciting to be there. I mean, it is busy and it is noisy, and frankly, it's pretty jovial right now because we've won the majority, and that gives us a sense that we have a little bit of control over the direction this country is headed. But I have every reason for optimism. I mean, I'm finding partners on both sides of the aisle. I am spending time with all members of our delegation, Democrat and Republican, and looking always for places where we can find common ground to do good work for the American people.
Who are your new friends on the Republican and Democratic side?
Well, Dusty Johnson on the Republican side is a fun guy from South Dakota. Oh, he'll get really mad at me if he's from North Dakota. He's from South Dakota, and he's a great guy. I look forward to partnering with him, and I think we may, I haven't run this by him yet, but I think we may try to do sort of visiting each other's states, which I think would be a great show of bipartisanship. I just co-sponsored a bill with Dan Newhouse right here in Washington State for the Yakima Basin Integrated Plan. And so every opportunity to do something that is for the benefit of the vast majority of the people in this district and in this country, I look for partners on both sides of the aisle.
What is the Yakima Basin Plan? Basin Plan, not basement.
Right. So the Yakima Basin Plan is a plan that has been in the works for the past 10 years, and it is a way to ensure that we have adequate water supplies for the foreseeable future that serve our fish habitats, that serve our farmers, and that serve our communities. And so the beautiful thing about the Yakima Basin Plan is that it brought together all different stakeholders who are used to being in conflict with one another. So we're talking about farmers, we're talking about American Rivers, Trout Unlimited, we're talking about municipalities and water districts, and they all came together and said, look, we need to use this water for all of our benefits. How are we going to do it? And they came up with a plan, and I'm just excited to be partnering with Dan Newhouse in sponsoring it.
So, like in so many states, water was not the problem. We have a lot of water, but using it turned out to be a little more difficult.
Well, I mean, we don't really have a lot of water. We have a changing climate. We can anticipate more and more water shortages. We have had droughts, in which cases tributaries dried up. Salmon habitat was devastated. Farmers were devastated. And so this is a way to really be forward thinking about a limited resource and how we can conserve and allocate appropriately for all of our benefits.
You're in Wenatchee for a visit. And Wenatchee is sort of interesting to me because I'm a newcomer here. It has some of the problems that you would associate with urban life, and it has many of the problems that you would associate with rural farm life. And those are hard to balance sometimes. How do you do it?
Well, first of all, I'm partnering with my colleagues here. We just had a town hall this morning. I'm working with the mayor and with county council. We've talked about, at the same time, traffic problems and homelessness. We've talked about escalating housing prices, and we've talked about farmlands and how to support our farmers. And so I am glad to have partners here, and we are now in City Hall, just next door to Mayor Kuntz's office, and so I look forward to a really nice, long cooperative partnership.
So you got a good welcome when you came to town?
I got a great welcome. So thank you. Shout out to everybody here who has just been incredibly warm and also anxious to work together.
What do you think Wenatchee wants right now? I mean, you had a long list of problems. What's step one in the right direction?
Well, first of all, you need the Apple Loop. You need your infrastructure plan. And so we've already written a letter supporting that so that you can hopefully get federal government matching funding and have a way to bypass the traffic in the middle of the city. So we also need a comprehensive immigration reform. And this is something that small businesses need, that farms need, that farmers need, and frankly, the whole country needs. And so that's talking about not just safe borders and border security, but it's also talking about a path to citizenship for the 11 million people who are in this country right now, keeping our economy afloat, keeping the farms here locally afloat, and a good comprehensive guest worker program that, you know, improvements to the H-2A visa program so that farmers are taken care of and so that it works for small and medium-sized farms and not just for the large ones.
Is that taken care of? Can they get the workers they need?
Not yet. There are a lot of shortages. And I think the current atmosphere of xenophobia is really taking its toll. And the fact of the matter is that our economy depends on trade and on agriculture. And so we need to, you know, at the same time, address tariffs and make sure we have good trade agreements, especially with China. And also address this immigration crisis, because there are families here in Wenatchee who are afraid of family members being deported. And if people leave this city and we lose workers, the economy here tanks.
You and I both owe our ability to sit right here in the studio today to our immigration parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. Mine came from England and from Ireland. Yours came from Europe as well.
Yes.
We wouldn't be here without their right to find a new home.
That's absolutely right. And I should just, you know, my general philosophy is that people who are willing to make these kind of sacrifices and come to our country to a place where they don't speak the language and, you know, have just a couple dollars in their pocket, if that, are exactly the people with the kind of grit and motivation that we want in this country, and that it has always been the children and grandchildren of immigrants who become our medical researchers and our Nobel Prize winners. And so we need to be very thoughtful that if we close our borders, it will be, you know, the beginning of our own demise as a country.
And right now our borders are in flux. I don't think anybody, unless they pay a visit to several stops along the border, has any idea what's really going on down there. It could be, in some descriptions, a terrible threat to our democracy. It could be, in some instances, a quiet place where nothing's going on and, what, you know, nothing to see here. But it's got to be a combination of both, and it seems like we're going to tie this up in a terrible knot if we don't get it fixed within the next 10 years, really fixed.
I agree with you, and I think that we really need to be working with our leaders at the borders to know what's really going on down there. Otherwise, it just becomes folklore and talking points. And if we really rely on Customs and Border Patrol and our elected representatives in those border states, I think we can get a much better sense of what's going on, what our real threats are, and frankly, you know, the real threat to our border security was the influx of drugs and contraband and human trafficking. And what we just came up with on a bipartisan basis to address that, I think, is really smart, evidence-based.
There's much been written and said and recorded about the young women who have taken up the seat of power in Washington. The women of Washington are quite a story. And it's not really just one story. It's the background of all of them is so varied in the ones you've met and the ones that you have yet to meet. What sort of a club have you formed there, and is it collegial?
It's quite a club. We all went out at the same time and had to find something white to wear for State of the Union address. Boy, that's a challenge in the middle of winter. You know, it's really an amazing class, and it's an amazing class in part because of all the women, but also because of our diversity and because we all come from different backgrounds. We are a very diverse class. We all bring different backgrounds and viewpoints, and that's why it is so exciting to be part of this historic class. And you look at our side of the aisle, and we look a whole lot more like America. And I think it's really important that our House of Representatives really reflects our country. So I'm honored. You know, a lot of us women, we had no idea that this was going to be part of a wave. You know, we just knew that in the wake of the election, the attacks on healthcare, that we wanted to step up and do something really good for our districts, for our countries, for kids. And lo and behold, we all made that same calculation at the same time and became a wave.
Can you characterize the energy of that group? Because they sound and they look like you are having a lot of fun. And this is a chaotic time that we've already established, but it's also a dangerous time for the democracy, and to see a group of women just flood into Washington and seem to have a lot of up, positive, kinetic energy is a little bit renewing in terms of people who are watching to see when the next shoe's going to fall.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I think that we all have a lot of reason for optimism right now, and I think it helps the mood in the room to be in the majority after feeling pretty hopeless for the past 2 years that, you know, there's a bit more balance in government, and government is working again with a system of checks and balances. Yeah, we are a lively, energetic, enthusiastic group, and, you know, we have divergent viewpoints on a lot of things, and we have united values on a lot of things, and so I think we're just all really excited to be there and to be working for the betterment of our districts and our country.
Do the group of you ever talk to one another and say, can you help me with this? Or do you know how to do this? Or where do I go to find this? Or how do you do this?
Oh, we do all of the same. And let's, you know, let's forget that, you know, we're this new class, but we're standing on the shoulders of giants. And so we ask those questions to the people who were there before as well. I alluded to Lois Frankel, who helped me find an apartment, but you know, we can talk about that in every respect. how do you get this done? And how do you make these decisions that are, you know, maybe a lose-lose decision that you have to make? And how do you really do what's best for your district when it's hard to do that?
Do you remember your first vote and how you prepared for it?
Well, my first vote was for Speaker of the House, and I was very excited to support Nancy Pelosi. I think she has proven herself to be a really effective leader, and she understands that we all come from different districts, that we don't all come from San Francisco, and that we are representing very much the middle of the country, and we need to govern for the benefit of the vast majority of people in our districts and in our countries, and she's mindful of that.
Did you think her leadership role that she has assumed almost without effort was a bit of a surprise? Because it seemed to be to the public. No one did you expect her to step forward in this fashion and be the leader that she's is becoming?
I did. I had no doubt that she was highly capable of this job. I also knew that we would all be coming from diverse viewpoints and that we would need somebody experienced to be able to guide the ship. And she is very much playing that role. So she's a role model for all of us. She's incredibly warm, and she knows us all, and she knows we need to serve our districts.
During the State of the Union message, much was made of a movement that she made. I don't know if she was directing you guys to calm down or directing you to take part, but are you a rowdy group that has to be dealt with periodically? Did they draw the women together and say, now look, don't you remember, please, that there's always a camera on you and there's someone always recording what you're going to say?
I think sometimes we need to be reminded that there's always a camera on us.
I think we know that now.
And that microphones are always live. We're a rowdy group. I mean, to the point, I gotta say, you know, it seems disrespectful at times, but we have to be told constantly, the house is not in order. House, come to order. You are not in order. In other words, just close your trappers. You're talking too much and you're not listening. So, good lessons to be learned there.
Wow. So who calls you to order like that? The sergeant at arms?
I hope it's not the sergeant at arms. It's whoever is speaker for that day, the speaker pro tempore, who, you know, at the point where we can't even hear what he or she is saying, he uses that gavel very effectively.
So it's really just like a political convention when they say, sit down and stop acting like a bunch of Democrats, right?
That sounds about right.
That sounds about right. My very special guest is the representative from the 8th District, Dr. Kim Schreier. Your representative will be back after this on News Radio 560 KPQ.
To ride. With 7 trips a day, you can pick and choose when you want to hit.
Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
This is News Radio 560 KPQ. Michael Knight doing the agenda for yet another day. My very special guest is Representative Dr. Kim Schreier. Do you drop the doctor? I like to add it in for extra emphasis. Or do you? Are you still a physician in your own mind?
You know, I kind of respond to everything. Kim's also fine. Doctor, congresswoman, I've been doctor for 20 years, so I'm kind of trying out this congresswoman thing, and it feels pretty good. And I signed something the other day, and just as a joke, wrote MDMC, so medical doctor, member of Congress, and it kind of looked like a Roman numeral, frankly.
That's kind of a rare group, though. Oh, by the way, have you been called to do any diagnoses on the floor of the House? Has anyone had heart palpitations? And they say, get a hold of Schreier. Get her over here.
You know, I haven't talked about this one yet, but nobody called me, but the night of the State of the Union, there was a thump in the back of the room. Did you know this?
No.
There was a thump in the back of the room, and it just sounded like a thump that a doctor needed to pay attention to. And I happened to be wearing a white suit, and just for a talking point or an accent piece, I had my stethoscope, my red stethoscope in my pocket. And when I heard that thump and I turned around and looked, sometimes you just have that sixth sense. It seemed like a medical emergency. So I went hustling back there, and one of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle had fainted. By the time I got there, he had, you know, woken up, and it was clearly a faint. And so I followed him, and there were a couple other doctors there, into the Republican, I don't know what you call it, like their
cloakroom?
Their cloakroom, yes.
Right.
And I did not feel like I necessarily belonged there. But what was funny about it was that he was clearly fine. His pulse was fine. But he was embarrassed, and he did not want to take any recommendations from a woman in white, first of all, from somebody on the other side of the aisle, and from a pediatrician. I feel like, you know, he felt very insulted by the whole thing. But I said, you got to lie down on the floor and put your feet up on that chair because you're still gray. You're going to go down again. Like, I can tell you this. So he kind of slid down in his chair a little bit. I said, no, really, like, you really need to put your body down on the ground and put your feet up on the chair. I'm not doing this to embarrass you, but you got to swallow your pride here. So he kind of scooched down a little further, and he tried putting his feet up. And then finally somebody, a male doctor, told him, she's right. You need to lie down on the floor and put your feet up on the chair. And he did. So, go figure.
Isn't that the funny thing about the body? When you're ready to pass out, you hold your breath, and that just finishes it for you, right? Over you go. Well, we talked about your first vote a little bit. Have there been any major ones that, how do they tell you when it's time to vote? Because there's voting is going on all the time, or how do you manage your schedule?
So we typically vote somewhere around 10:30 in the morning, and then we typically vote somewhere around 1:30 in the afternoon, but it's very fluid, and there's a series of lights and beeps and all kinds of things that happen, and one beep means that the floor is open, and when it gets to five beeps, it means hustle on down here, you got to vote. And we know in advance what's coming up. We change the rules right at the beginning, so we have 72 hours to review any legislation before we have to vote on it, which seems like a no-brainer, but it's really important to be able to thoughtfully consider any legislation before we vote on it.
I don't mean to point the finger at anyone, but there's got to be people who don't read the bills they vote on. This is just something I'm surmising. There's so much reading going on, and it seems that some politicians aren't gifted when it comes to actually reading the printed word.
I cannot speak for others, but I can tell you that it's really important to me to know what I'm voting on, to always be able to look my constituents in the eye and tell them what I voted for and why, and to do the same with my family and with my patients.
You were at the State of the Union message, which you just established. I don't know if you billed the member of Congress for your medical services that night, but what did you take away from that, all the pomp and circumstance of the evening? Was it fun? Was it disappointing? Was it worth the effort? Did you learn anything?
Well, look, I think it's really important that we all go, that we respect the office of the presidency, and that we are an audience there. So I was honored to be able to attend. I took somebody from our district who has a pre-existing condition, who was diagnosed with colon cancer at age 42, and we talked about the importance of protecting people with pre-existing conditions. I was very heartened to see that there are areas where we can agree and work together, like bringing down the cost of prescription drugs and an infrastructure project and combating HIV and childhood cancer. Like, all of that sounds like policy that we can all get behind. I was frustrated by some of the other comments that were either just flatly false, misleading, I don't know what you would say, just inflammatory.
When it's time to deal with the prescription drug costs, where do you start? Your experience as a doctor is probably more informative here than anything else that you've learned in Congress. Where do you start to get the attention of the industry that doesn't seem likely to want to reduce prices?
Well, I think you don't have to do these things one at a time. I mean, first, I think Medicare needs to be able to negotiate drug prices. Right now, it can't, and that means our seniors are paying far more than our neighbors in Canada are paying for their medications, and that's just plain wrong. But there are lots of ways to approach this. You know, one is once they can negotiate drug prices, then there's an incentive to keep those prices lower. Second is we need to have better plans for getting medications to generics so that they are more affordable. But we also have to have some oversight and make sure that the same manufacturers aren't producing the name brand and the generic and artificially keeping the prices high. I believe there is a role to sharply curtail or end the direct-to-consumer advertising that I believe has been devastating for drug prices. Because
ask your doctor about whatever it is.
That's exactly right. I mean, now we're treating diseases we never knew were diseases. And it's who doesn't want to look like the pretty lady on TV? It's really important that doctors make those decisions, that patients aren't asking for very expensive name-brand medications. And you could add to that these drug discount programs where they say, you know, you'll pay the same copay that you would have paid for the generic, well, you know, that's fine and dandy for the person who's getting that prescription, but, you know, we all end up paying then because we all pay higher insurance premiums when we're using more expensive but not necessarily any better and sometimes worse medications.
People who are 20, 30, 40 are not taking any medicine right now, and they think that's the way life's going to be, but by the time they're 50 and 60, they do have medication that they take every day. So it's a industry that we rely on for our life, and it's a judgment call by our physicians that we put our health in their hands. And then, at the very end of it, we pay a price that may only be related to the industry that makes the pill, and not our future, not our health, and not our doctor.
It's a really profound statement. It's really interesting. And I think there's also a big role here to talk about nutrition as a way to ward off disease that will later require medication. And so I'm on the Agriculture Committee and also on the Education Committee, which are great ways to serve this district. But when I think about what we could do in terms of nutrition programs and making sure that we're not just focused on calories, but we're focused on nutrition, let's get some fresh or frozen fruits and vegetables into our kids and into our families. And if we can do that, we could combat obesity and food insecurity at the same time and hopefully stave off things like diabetes and heart disease later that will end up costing society a whole lot more. So hoping to take a more holistic view.
So indeed, a Wenatchee apple a day is really good for you.
Oh my gosh, a Wenatchee, like 10 apples a day are great for you.
We have a lot of candidates running for the presidency. And given the nature of our government right now, that's not a surprise. But are you surprised at some of the people who have thrown their hat into the ring? Are there too many, and are there going to be twice as many before we're done?
What are we up to, 50, 60 now?
I'm not really certain, to tell you the truth.
You know, I think anybody's welcome to run for office. I applaud them for doing it, for stepping up. I know you put a lot on the line, and you put your family on the line in order to do it. And so I am very grateful to all of them for stepping up. I guess my one big comment is that, we Democrats have this bad habit of attacking one another. We call it the circular firing squad. And, you know, there are no perfect candidates in this world. And so I've just asked my colleagues, you know, and people, you know, constituents, like, choose who you like and work on their campaign and doorbell for them or donate to their campaign, whatever it is. But the way it stands right now, I don't know, say there's 30 people running, you know, 29 out of those 30 aren't going to make it through. And so let's rally around the person who does and make sure we support them and focus on their positives and don't try to bring them down.
You may notice that when Bernie announced he was running, Bernie Sanders, the big news was not that he had thrown his hat into the ring, but that he had $4 million already overnight. And so the idea of, well, who cares if he's a good candidate? He's financially viable, so let the stories begin. Start your television campaign, Bernie. Is that what it's going to be about? Who can put the most money together if anyone's going to beat the Republicans from the Democratic side?
Finances are the way you get your message out. And one of the things that I'm so proud of in this new Congress is that we have introduced H.R. 1, which is the For the People Act. And what this includes is basically it's a whole plan on getting democracy back into the hands of the people. And part of that is getting big special interest money out of our politics, ending this dark money, these super PACs. But it's also about restoring voting rights, and it's about having matching funds so that low-dollar donors get more bang for their buck. And it has a pay-for mechanism that is not taxation. And so this is a way to make sure that people who traditionally have not had sway in politics, who haven't been able to be big donors, can now have some sway and make sure they put those finances behind the candidate that they like. And so, you know, money speaks, and that's why I would say choose your candidate and then send them a donation, work on their campaign, doorbell for them. And when we see good community support, that's who rises to the top.
That's Representative Dr. Kim Schreier. We'll be back. For members of the 8th District, listen closely. I'll be back with the conclusion of our talk right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Will thoroughly clean your ducts. Call 663-9562. They are your clean connection.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
I can't imagine what it was like for your first day as a doctor. That's got to be a really intense day. But your first day as a congresswoman, was it anything like the pressure that you felt as a physician?
Oh, gosh, they're so different. But you know what? There is something that you have in common for both of them. I mean, when you go from medical school to your first day of residency and being a physician, all of a sudden they're calling you Dr. Schreier, you have to kind of deal with the fact that you don't know everything, that you're not operating on I don't know what the word is, like a...
Automatic pilot.
you can't be on autopilot. You don't have all the information. You need to rely on your colleagues, and you are trying to make your way without all of the information that you need. And I think that has prepared me for Congress, because I am also, at times, just kind of having to operate without all of the information that I would like to have, running from one meeting to the next and learning about a topic as I am on my way to that meeting. And so I think that ability to have a flexible brain to learn quickly and to adapt is really helpful. And I believe that being a good listener is pretty darn helpful, too.
What committees does a freshman end up on? The ones they want, or just the ones they can get?
All of the above. So I requested agriculture because I really want to be a really good representative for the people here in the eastern part of this district, where agriculture is king. And I think it's really important to participate in food programs because kids and families who have adequate nutrition are better workers and better students. And so I think that's a great place for a pediatrician to be, and science-based. And so working with the farmers here, that has great appeal to me, especially when it comes to, farmers having this incredible ability not just to feed our nation, but also to help us address our changing climate. So I'm excited about that. I'm also on the education committee, which I also requested, to really advocate for early childhood education as the most important thing we can do to make sure that our kids graduate from high school and then go on to whatever path they want to take and do it successfully and have a good outcome.
Do we have a chance to change some of the tariffs that are in place? Do they have to be there for years to come, or can they be modified, especially when it comes to cherries and apples and the sale in the Far East?
Oh, yeah, we've got to get rid of these tariffs. They're terrible. They're killing our farmers, and you and I both know that the more this escalates, the more likely it is that China will just say, well, heck, I'm just going to get my cherries or my apples elsewhere. And then our farmers never really get that market back. And so we need to push back against these tariffs and push for good, fair trade deals with other countries. I cannot emphasize that here we are in the state of Washington, the most trade-dependent state in the nation. We need to be pursuing fair trade. Our economy depends on it, and frankly, I think relationships with our colleagues around the world, if we want geopolitical stability, we need to have good trade deals.
Nations that are born in revolution sometimes have difficulty down the road. They continue that revolting development periodically. And it feels like we're in sort of a revolution right now. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be. Do you have more faith in the future than I do right now?
I feel optimistic for the first time in a couple years. I think this hopefully is a big hiccup and a learning opportunity for our country. I have restored faith based on the 2018 election outcome that people care and people are watching, and we all want a better country for our kids, and that when push comes to shove, we can tell the difference. And so I think that given the information and given a full bit of information about what has happened with the 2016 elections, that the voters will decide wisely in 2020. And I think we have brighter days ahead.
Representative Dr. Kim Schreier from the 8th District, thank you so much for being here, and thanks for visiting Wenatchee.
Thank you, Michael.
News Radio 560 KPQ.
Here's your News Radio 560 KPQ business and financial news. For more details, head to our website, kpq.com.
12:54 at News Radio 560 KPQ.